Welcome back to the Shit You Don't Learn in School podcast. This is Calvin Rosser.
And this is Steph Smith.
And today we're going to explore the question, when is cheating okay?
All right, we have a dicey topic today. We're going to be talking about cheating. And this episode was inspired by a story that you're writing about, Cal, in your new book. So what's the juice?
The juice. So I had an idea for a chapter called Play It As It Lays. And I think the punchline of it is that you should operate pretty honestly across different areas of your life. And the story I was starting with in that chapter was, I think, one of the things I feel the most shame about in my life. So I was a competitive golfer growing up. And in high school, I was on a team that was that had a really good chance of winning the state championship. So in high school golf, there are three stages to win the state championship. You play a district tournament, top three teams go forward. Then there's a regionals one, the top two pass on from there. And then there's a state tournament. And whoever wins that wins all the marbles. And that's like a big deal in Florida where golf's a big sport. So I was the number two player on the team. And in the district tournament, which we were supposed to breeze through pretty easily because we were a good team, on the fifth hole, I ended up hitting a bad shot to the left. And it looked like it was going to be okay. But as I went to find my ball, I was actually unable to find it. And so what you do actually in golf is you would go back to the tee box. You'd be hitting your third ball if you were to actually lose a ball. Instead, I made a bad decision.
Uh-oh.
So I walked over to my bag and I pulled out a ball that had the same markings as the one that I had originally played. And I put that ball in my hand and I clenched my fist so no one really saw it. And I tried to act pretty covertly. And in my mind, I didn't know what I was going to do. But what I ended up doing was I placed that ball in the rough secretly, which is totally illegal. And I said, hey, I found my ball. And one of the competitors, I don't know what he saw in my face or what I said, but kind of called my bluff and continued looking for my ball, started walking through the yards of the people where the ball might have been. And he actually found it. And so before I hit my next shot, he said, I found your ball.
Oh my God, that must have been such a bad feeling.
It was... I'm getting a little sweaty even thinking about it because it's one of these moments, and we can talk about this more in a bit, but if you cheat and you get away with it, you feel guilty often. But when you're caught and people can see you for what you are, a cheater or a liar or something that you don't want to be, something that you don't see yourself as, there's just this blanket of shame. And I had no idea what was going to come next. I was worried what my grandpa would think about me. I was worried about what was going to happen in the tournament. I thought my teammates were going to forever think I was just a terrible person. I was worried about my reputation as a golfer because this wasn't something that I regularly did. And I was a pretty good golfer. And I just had a moment of weakness. And anyways, in that tournament, I ended up getting disqualified. And it was unclear whether I was going to be able to play in future tournaments that had to go to a committee. And as my coach was talking to me, I realized that what I had done was much worse than that because the team was playing terribly that day. And we ended up making it past that round by only one stroke, which is an unbelievably low number in golf. So not only did I get caught in this terrible act, but I almost lost things for the team and really put our state championship run at risk.
Yeah, I think something that you spoke to that really resonates with me, and I'll speak to my one instance of cheating in a little bit. But when you cheat, you know the scope of your cheating, as in, you know how many times you've cheated before, if that's one, if that's zero, if that's 50. You also know how that permeates into other traits of trustworthiness. But when you're caught cheating, it just spirals. And that spirals on both ends, as in other people are like, okay, if he's cheated now, like how many times has he cheated before? And if he cheats in golf, does that mean he also cheats in many other areas of life? Does this just mean he's inherently an untrustworthy person? And so I think that is why cheating is a tough thing to do, but also that just that getting caught part is like just such a rough feeling. And obviously you deserve it if you've cheated, but it's kind of like, wow, you then worry how people see you in almost every aspect of life.
Yeah. And this hits people differently. So if you're a sociopath, you may have some really good rationalization for why you cheat or actually feel numb about it. Or even if you're not a sociopath, you may have some good reasons for cheating. So we could talk about those. Like some people cheat so that they can be more charitable or so that they can keep the peace or something. And there's ways you can use your mind to delude yourself into acting poorly and then rationalizing it and not actually seeing yourself as a bad actor. But in this case, I was truly an emperor without clothes. There was no good reason to do what I did. I understand why I did it, but it was just complete shame and hatred of the self. And then, of course, just dealing with other people and the lasting consequences of that. And honestly, I think this event actually, after I graduated from high school, in some ways took me away from the game of golf because it was just one of a few things where I had this negative relationship with myself via this game. And this was just one way in which that manifested.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff can really stick with you. One example that's coming to mind is the recent chess news where Neiman has been accused of cheating in the past. He's admitted to it. Who knows if he's cheated more recently? But just by the nature of him cheating in the past, people just don't trust him. And your history just follows you in that way. But as you said, people react differently after getting caught. So what happened next? Did you ever cheat again in golf?
No, so I never cheated again in golf. And the way the story actually played out had a somewhat happy ending, except with a painful interlude. So I ended up getting disqualified from that event. And then after a committee review, they let me play the next event, which was the regional tournament. And I played well and really helped my team there. And then we actually went on to win the state championship, which was a really big deal. And I think a highlight for a lot of people. But it's one of those things that I actually don't talk about much, I think in part because this thing happened to me. And then on the final day at States, I didn't play all that well. But I had this almost bitter taste in my mouth around what was supposed to be the pinnacle of being on a high school golf team. Like one team wins every year in one of the most competitive golfing states in the country. And so this was like a really big deal. And every time someone finds out, they're like, holy shit, that's really impressive. You must be really good at golf. And I'm like, yeah, but then in the back of my head, I just have this almost sour taste that still lasts to this day.
I can understand that. That one experience soured your experience with golf to a degree for many years. But at the time, how did other people react? Like, how did your team react, your coach, your grandpa, who you've mentioned many times on this podcast is like a father figure to you? How did all these people react?
So there were different reactions. So right when I got disqualified, my coach, he had me hop in the cart and took me back to the clubhouse to wait for everyone to finish. And he was a competitive, fierce guy, but very compassionate. But in this case, he was just bubbling with rage and there was no way for him to contain it. I think he was just like, what the actual fuck? Like, why did you do this? This is shitty. And when I think about his perspective, it wasn't just me who had to deal with shame. It was actually him because mm-hmm. he was known as like a great coach. Did he allow cheating on his team? So you got to think of that, like there's these far reaching implications. And of course he didn't. And he was like, this is one of the shittiest things I think I've seen done. And I'm like, that doesn't make me feel better, but I hear you. And I think eventually he let up because obviously I felt really terrible about this. And this wasn't something that I was doing repeatedly. My teammates were actually more understanding, I think in part because they saw how bad I felt about myself.
Do you think part of that came from the fact that maybe they've cheated too?
That's actually an interesting thought because the answer is probably yes. I don't know whether they cheated or not, but I think everyone, when you play a competitive sport, maybe you try to cut edges in some way. It might not be as explicit as what I did. And maybe there were times in their past where they could resonate with what happened. I don't know. I don't remember the details there, but they certainly didn't put their foot on my neck directly, even if they felt shitty about it. I think had we lost that district tournament, which we almost did and didn't move on, I would have been a big source of blame for that. And then one of the hardest things was my grandpa, who is generally just a really affable, supportive guy and just really positive, even when things are going bad and I make mistakes. He was just like completely dismayed and almost couldn't believe what I had done because it fractured his perspective of me because he saw how hard I worked at the game, how committed I was, and generally how much integrity I had. And so this almost like broke his worldview of me. And I think he was just very disappointed. He wasn't angry in the same way that my coach was, but there was this sense of, you know, just disappointment in everything that he had put into me, including in instilling values like integrity in my life. And I think this was like a fracture of that. Of course, he moved on from, but that was one of the tougher ones just because it was such a personal relationship.
So you said that you didn't cheat in golf again. How much of that was driven by your own reaction to the events versus some of those other dynamics, like seeing how your grandpa reacted versus the risk or other things that may have come into play?
Honestly, it's all of it. And I've come to believe that if you're caught cheating in any domain, it's not likely that it's the first time that you've done something like that. So in my case in golf, I don't remember all of the details, but I do remember one time when I was like 11, I played with this golfer who was not all that good. And my mom was with us that time, and she was the only ones watching us. This was in a tournament. And we both kind of agreed on like a cheating score. It was such a silly thing where we, you know, we played the round, but then we fudged the scores. And that was just so much more widespread than what happened in this one instance where I placed the ball and then certainly wouldn't have cheated the rest of the round. But I think that those were like errors of being really young and doing something stupid. But to be honest, had I been caught there, that would have been the best gift I could have had, because I would have had similar types of shame and things that came there, and I probably would have never cheated again. And I think some of it comes down to when you're caught in a big enough way, just all of the things associated with that mean that you're probably not going to do this thing again if you're a reasonable person and self-reflective. So it was just clear to me in this case, like, why would I ever cheat again? It was totally not worth it. Like, so what? I was going to have a worse score. Now I've potentially compromised my whole team and my relationships with people, that it just was not at all worth the benefit.
I totally agree with the sentiment of getting caught earlier, because I think at the end of the day, people view cheating in different ways, but it is somewhat of a risk calculus. And if you've cheated for a really long time and gotten away with it, you come to believe that you're unlikely to be caught even after you're caught. And I think people really downplay the role of luck in some of that. Like, they think, oh, I'm such a good cheater, I've figured out a way to beat the system, but sometimes they haven't. And it's, again, partially luck of just haven't been caught yet. I quickly want to share my single story of cheating, because I actually was caught on the first time. And I know people are probably like, she's lying, like, she did it many times, and then she's just saying she got caught that first time. But no, the one time I did cheat on a history test in, what was it, in high school. I think it was grade 10. And history tests, you have to memorize all of these random dates. And I think I just wasn't studying very hard in that particular class. And so test is coming up. I realize I'm unprepared. The day of, I think the test was in the afternoon, I was studying with a bunch of people all day, going back and forth, trying to memorize these dates. And then I saw this one guy who had some stuff written on his hand. Now, I don't know if he cheated. I don't know if he just used that as a form of studying. I guess he probably cheated. But I was like, oh, maybe I'll write some stuff on my hand. And then the intention originally was, well, actually, I don't know what the intention was. But eventually I was like, okay, let me just write a bunch of these dates on my hand. And because I had actually studied with those friends all day long, it turns out I actually was really prepared for the test. So much so that I had all this stuff on my hand, but I forgot it was there, because I literally, within the first 2 minutes of the test, I raised my hand to ask the teacher a question about the test, like an idiot, like the type of person who hasn't cheated before. And I literally raised the hand with all the shit on it. And the teacher walks over and is like, what is on your hand? And it's obviously same kind of emotions, like really embarrassing. I start spiraling and I'm like, oh my gosh, people are going to think that I cheat all the time. I'm this good student. They're no longer going to think that actually comes from hard work or intelligence. They're going to think I'm just an untrustworthy person. And because it was the first time I cheated, that risk reward calculus was like, I'm never doing this again. Like, this totally sucks. And it's interesting to reflect on this later, because at the time I thought this was this huge deal, but I was looking up stats on cheating recently, specifically cheating on tests, and it seems like everyone does it. I thought I was like this bad girl who cheated on a test, and I guess I was in a way, but I looked up a stat and it said 75 to 98% of college students have cheated. Now, that was a headline. I don't know if it's true, but I was like, oh, does everyone do this?
I think in the realm of school, probably almost everyone has cheated in one way, shape, or form. And I even imagine today it's more present because you have smartphones where you can go look things up. I bet there's better systems in place. Like, back when we were in school, we didn't have that. And so you could do things like write stuff on your hand or copy the smart kid in class if possible. But I think even like the Scantrons or other things that you used, I think they solve for some of that by like reordering tests so that you couldn't actually do that in all cases. But yeah, I remember kids cheating all the time. I was one of the smart kids who did well in school. And certainly I remember seeing like eyes on my paper. And there's an actually interesting question of if you let someone look at your paper, are you complicit in the cheating as well? And I do remember raising my right shoulder or using my left arm to cover tests in some cases.
I mean, it's a good question that you bring up around this idea of what cheating even is. And there are some very clear examples of cheating, but I also come to wonder sometimes whether, if we use the school environment as an example, it's like, are some people cheating or are they being resourceful? I think writing on your hand going into a history test is like clearly cheating. You're not being resourceful. You're just breaking the rules for no reason. But I don't know if like, imagine an 8-year-old kid taught himself programming and automated his homework or something. I guess you could say that's cheating. I would say that's pretty resourceful. So I think some of these lines are actually gray in some cases.
I think in the school case, what's interesting, this podcast, The Shit You Don't Learn in School, one thing that you learn when you get out of school is that in business, people are effectively cheating all the time if you consider it in the school environment. You can ask your colleagues for answers. You can see what your competitors are doing. The information is much more visible. It's not like in school where you have to memorize something and then if you don't, you end up failing the test. Actually, all of the information in business, for the most part, is available. And there's a lot more collaborative nature to things that is incongruent with the experience that you have in school.
Totally. And it begs the question of, one, should we restructure school to be different so that it mimics the quote unquote real world? But then it's also this idea of like, when is cheating okay? You can imagine, for example, a student who is really bright, but just cannot retain facts. They cannot memorize anything. And they would thrive in, again, quote unquote, the real world, but they feel the need to get a degree to have the credentials to get hired. And so they go into a test and they cheat just so that they can get a good mark, have their degree, and then with that degree, they get hired and they thrive in a real job. I guess it's wrong. It's like objectively wrong. But at the same time, I think it's interesting to consider when people are constrained by certain systems and certain rules, and they don't know another way to operate within those systems.
Yeah. And so there are some cases where cheating is pretty black and white. Like in the case of the golf, I did something that broke the rules of the game in the tournament. And so it was very clear what had happened there and it shouldn't have been done. But then I'm thinking of something in college that I struggled with a lot in my own head, which is I had friends who had parents who went to Ivy League schools and they would send them their papers that they wrote for classes and their parents would give them feedback on those papers. I was always resentful of that because I didn't have any parents who could help me with that. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You're getting help from these people who have already been through this experience and it's like an unfair advantage. And those same people, when they heard that someone did Adderall, and were able to go to the library and study for longer, thought that was some form of cheating, that that was ethically much worse than, say, what they did with getting their parents' help. And in my mind, I always thought that was a ridiculous thing. Like, you get this free help from resources in your life, and these other people are being potentially, quote unquote, resourceful by using a drug that allows you to study for longer and harder, and it's still you doing the work. But for some reason, that was morally dubious to them. So I think in that case, I don't know if there is a right or wrong unless the rules are explicitly defined. That's where things get into shades of gray based on your own personal morality, which can often be based on the thing that is most self-serving for you.
Yeah, I like that example. And it's making me think of another scenario where imagine someone is really struggling to find a job. They have the skills, but they just don't have the resume that grabs people's attention, and they decide to lie about their prior experiences. They still go through the same interview process. They still maybe even do an assessment to show that they can do the work, but they lied. And I know there are people who do this. Again, I guess it's objectively wrong, but it's interesting to consider when people almost just want a shot. And actually, it reminds me of something that happened at a company I worked at once where someone did this. They literally lied about what was on their resume. But the bizarre thing about the process was they got through the whole interview process. We were about to hire them. I think they thought we were about to go through a background check. And so then they told us basically, hey, I lied about these things. And it was such a bizarre position to be in because we were like, well, we really like this candidate. We were ready to hire them. But now it feels like they have low integrity. And at the same time, we didn't care about their degree, which was a specific thing that they lied about. But like, can we still move forward with hiring this person now that we know that they lied to us? So it's very bizarre. In that case, we actually didn't hire the person, but I don't know. It's kind of interesting to think about.
Yeah, this case of people lying on their resumes seems to be one that comes up from time to time where someone said, oh, I went to Harvard Business School, and then they were within a company for many years until they were found out. And, you know, that one is clearly, I think, wrong, but also, as you're saying, understandable. Maybe someone came from a low income background and they didn't go to a good school, but they're just as sharp and smart and creative as everyone else, and they just want to give themselves that shot. I think that's coming from a place that many of us could probably understand. But once you cross that line, then you have to live in this big lie, and you could question whether that was okay or not okay. But I think where it's not okay is thinking about it for you as an individual. And so I think even if you were able to get away with that for some time, you're probably always on edge in some capacity that you're going to be found out. And I think one of the things that I've learned and that I was writing about in this book is whether it's in golf or relationships or school or work, and we can go into some of those examples, the cost of getting caught cheating often outweigh the benefits of that, and that it's better to play the straight and narrow approach, not just because you're a good moral person, but because you don't have to live in fear and suffer the consequences of when you get caught, even if it's something that's not actually that harmful.
And I think it's not just about getting caught. I think you're totally right about this idea of living a lie, even if it's a white lie. Little tiny lies can compound. And the few times earlier in my life where I cheated on this history test or I told a white lie, it totally haunted me. And now I choose to not cheat or to be more transparent because of exactly what you're saying, because it's just like kind of a selfish reason of not wanting to hold that burden of keeping track of what's true and what's not true, or what story have I told here or here. And I have met people that I think do lie a lot. I can think of one person from my past in particular, and he was just always stressed, and it never surprised me because I was like, yeah, you're having to literally keep track of like 30 different stories that you tell everyone.
Yeah. And I think there are actual physical consequences on your body, as you're talking about the stress that this person exhibited, largely probably because they were lying so much and had to keep up with all these things. And those are some of the costs that you may not think about in that micro decision of should I cheat here or not, or should I tell this lie? You don't realize how that can cascade into all these really negative things that end up detracting from your life far more than any benefit that you gleaned. And just going back to my golf example for a moment, you know, for the most part, I was actually just incredibly dedicated, good golfer who played by the rules. And what's interesting is that I think even telling this story publicly on this podcast, I still am feeling that shame and discomfort, and somehow that I ruined my own reputation or self-perception in a way that I think most people would forgive me for or maybe understand. But I still carry that, and that flows into, you know, even when I talk about my childhood for this sport that I worked so hard to be good at. And yet I have this one instance where I really let myself make a bad decision that has these lasting consequences that I literally still feel physically in my body. On the flip side of that, getting caught there actually, I think, made me operate in the straight and narrow in many other domains in life. And just one example is you go into a job, you have an expense policy. And actually, at most of the companies I've been at, it's operate in the company's best interest. It wasn't like really well defined. And I've always been very, I'd say, towing the line towards not taking advantage of the company at all, and maybe even taking on some of the burden of the cost myself, because I don't want to cross that ethical line of using a few extra dollars of company money, which is somewhat beneficial to me, but then ruining my reputation at work or eroding trust with my colleagues who I like and want to think highly of me. And so there's been some ensuing benefits to my life that I think made me a better person overall, but still there's this, you know, lingering feeling that just kind of sucks.
Yeah, I think I really resonate with you on this idea that even admitting to cheating once in high school on one history test feels really raw for some reason. And like, I feel judged by the people listening, even though I don't know their reaction, and chances are many of them have cheated. In fact, I posted on Twitter last night because I was thinking about this episode, how many people have cheated on a test, like a test specifically, not cheating in other dimensions. And just pulling up the results of the poll, 62% said yes several times, 10% said yes once, and then 28% said nope. Candidly, I don't know if I trust the 28%. Actually, that's still a minority, so maybe that's true. 28% said that they hadn't cheated on a test ever. But yeah, it's just interesting to consider how something that happened for both of us like many years ago still feels embarrassing or shameful. But I also resonate with this idea that there was so much shame in that case that I think it has impacted the way I operate elsewhere. And I don't think I ever reflected on that. But yeah, I just don't want to be caught up in a situation where people think that I'm doing good work, or that I have high integrity, or that I'm X, Y, or Z. And then for one tiny thing, to put that into question.
I think what we're sneaking up on is one of the really big downsides of cheating is an identity fracture. So I think most people like to see themselves as good people. And of course, if you've lived life, you know that you make mistakes or make bad decisions and you learn from them. And over time, you try to get better. But when something big happens in an important domain, you start to question this idea of, am I a good person? There's a lot of cognitive dissonance when you have a data point that is all your fault that says, hey, actually, you may not be the person that you thought you were. And I think that's where a lot of the shame comes from. And I think the reality is that it's okay to feel that shame to an extent, but at the same time, you have to move forward in some way. And so there's room for, let's just call it compassion, for just being a human who makes mistakes. And if you go forward and don't make those same mistakes, then that's the best course of action.
I think there's also something to be said about when you don't cheat and when you do things in an honest, credible way, it feels so much better. Like, if you get the job that was really hard to get given your circumstance, if you win the golf tournament and truly every shot was your shot and there was no cheating involved, that feels great. And I think for me, we started this conversation around this question of, is cheating ever okay? And honestly, I think you could debate certain circumstances where from the outside, you can justify why someone might cheat, or why maybe in certain circumstances, it's understandable. But I think the takeaway for me is that maybe barring some exceptions, cheating is actually something that's like more of a weight on yourself. Like, who cares if other people think it's okay or not? I've chosen not to really operate that way because I've learned from the past that it just sucks. It like is this blanket over your life, it feels.
Also, I think one thing you learn is, in the cases that we're talking about, the impact on others was fairly minimal. These were very small scale relative to other things that have happened. And one of the things that maybe we should talk about for a few minutes is, in the last week, we found out that Sam Bankman-Fried, who started FTX, a crypto exchange, may have acted in really bad ways. The crypto exchange has blown up that now are impacting millions of people who held funds at FTX, and the implications of what this person did have really bad cascading effects across society. And I've been thinking a lot this week of, how can this person come to do these things? And I never start from the place of, oh, this was an evil actor, sociopath who planned all this from the beginning. I actually, my best guess is this all started with good intentions, and those good intentions ended up going into bad actions as some sort of story was created in his head about what he needed to do to save the crypto exchange or to make things okay after making some mistakes. And a lot of this probably could have been avoided if mistakes were identified or owned up to much earlier in the cycle.
I think that's a great point, because we don't really know what happened in that scenario, but I think you're right that most of the time, someone doesn't start with horrible intentions or horrible actions. There's a pathway there that starts with like a little white lie where you're just trying to make someone else happy. And then maybe another lie where, okay, it's actually not for another person, but it's just super small. Don't worry about it. And then it continues and progresses. And then eventually you don't even realize the reality that you've painted for yourself. And yeah, I think being caught early is helpful. But then also, if you're in control of your own actions, not going down that slippery slope in the first place. I mean, something this reminds me of is Sam Harris's perspective on lying. Lying kind of feels like it overlaps with cheating, although I don't know if it's exactly the same. But he has this, is it like a mantra or like this position of just not lying, even when it's white lying?
Yeah, he's basically come up with a framework where even in some pretty bad cases, the actual best answer in all cases is just to never lie.
Yeah, so I've heard him debate this with people, and it's interesting to hear his perspective. I don't think we should hash this out. I think people should just go listen to him vouching for this concept. But I think there's merit to this idea of, instead of trying to arbitrarily draw some fake line for yourself to say, okay, like this kind of lying or this kind of cheating is okay and this kind isn't, removing even like the philosophical or judgmental perspective on it, I think it's actually just easier to just say, I'm not going to lie, I'm not going to cheat, because it's hard to keep tabs on things. And I think there is a very concrete dynamic of a slippery slope when it comes to lying and cheating.
Yeah, I think one thing that would be interesting to talk about Sam Harris's framework, I can't remember the exact example because it's been years since I read his book, Lying, which is just a short book communicating his philosophy on this. But I think he goes through a case of, let's say a known murderer shows up at your door and you're hiding someone that this person wants to murder. And he says, hey, do you have this person inside? He still says that in that case, you should tell the truth. You should say yes, even if that means that person is going to be murdered. And I think part of the reasoning for that is because you don't know the actual consequences when you lie. And so you may say no to the murderer, and that person doesn't believe you because you twitch your face in a weird way, and he actually goes and murders many more people than he would have, or kills you and your family, or all these kinds of things. And so some of it comes down to having a humility around not knowing the consequences of telling the truth or lying. Because I think a lot of people justify lying by saying, oh, I'm doing what's good for this person, or, oh, in the long run, this is going to be better. And the truth is that in most cases, you actually can't predict that reliably. And so the default answer should be telling the truth, because your little white lie actually turned into a lot more destruction, even if it had good intentions behind it.
Yeah, I find that example fascinating because many people understandably don't seem to agree with it, but it's always fascinating to debate with people. And I remember us doing that a few months ago. Why don't we just quickly touch on the subject that many people think of when they hear the word cheating, which is cheating in relationships. And some of the examples of cheating that we've given so far, you could argue don't really harm someone. Now, of course, you could maybe argue the other side of that, but what I think is hard to argue is when you cheat in a relationship, that not hurting someone, that someone being your partner, whoever you've gotten into that agreement with. So yeah, what do you think about cheating in a relationship?
I mean, one of the things that's always been striking to me, which we talked about in our episode on marriage and monogamy, is that something like 30% of people self-report that they have cheated in their marriage. And that to me has always struck me as very curious, because people enter this relationship where they're supposed to be monogamous and with this one person. And even if they love them, they end up deviating from that. And the consequences of that can be really terrible. Like, your partner's trust in you can be completely eroded. Your whole family can blow up. Your marriage can blow up. And that can ruin lives. And the truth is that even if you were good 99.8% of the time, this one event can often cause so much destruction. That's always bothered me in some ways, because it feels sad to me that an entire relationship and everything that went into it is just eroded from one action. But it's also understandable for the partner who's like, oh, I can never trust you again. And I think one of the takeaways from that is when you cheat, you're probably giving in to your short-term impulses and not thinking fully clearly about the long-term consequences of that, including all of the destruction in your own life and for the other person as well, who may be scarred for decades and not able to trust people again.
Yeah, I think this is speaking to something we've talked about throughout the episode, which is that people's reaction to someone cheating is more about trust and integrity versus the actual action. Like, the actual action of you picking up a ball and putting it down somewhere and saying it was the original ball is not that big of a deal. It's a big deal because you opted into a tournament with certain rules and you agreed to play those rules, and then you didn't. And the same thing goes for relationships. Like, you opted to be, in many cases, in a monogamous relationship with someone, just that person for the rest of your life. And we can debate whether that's a good or bad idea, but the point is that's what you agreed to. And that's why, even though you could say it was just one night, it means nothing, it's like, no, that's not what matters. It's the fact that you breached your trust with the person who you say you love so much. And so it does concern me when you hear these statistics about, like, wow, a lot of people do cheat. I still don't think it makes it okay. I just think each couple has to figure out what agreement they truly want or truly need. And I think that's a hard conversation to have, because I don't think they always line up, which is why people just avoid having that conversation. And then we see what happens in the statistics.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's weird to me, because I'm happy to discuss these things openly, is that people keep it under the covers because it's an uncomfortable topic. But I think when you look at a statistic like that, if you're going to marry someone, you should probably talk about what happens if this happens, even if that's not the plan. And that may be uncomfortable in the short term, but in the long term, I don't know, create more alignment or unity or just trust through being open about the mistakes and impulses of humans. One interesting frame that I read many years ago on this cheating problem is in Mark Manson's book, Models. And he basically says that cheating is a values problem. So if someone cheats, it's because they're valuing something other than the relationship. It could be a desire for power, validation through sex, or an unconscious action to protect their future selves from being hurt. And the reason itself doesn't matter. It just means that you're prioritizing something over fostering the healthy and trusting partnership that you said you were going to build. And so I think for people who are serial cheaters, and this may be more common for young people, I think one way to think about that is you need to realign your values so that you're valuing the relationship over all other things. And then that quick one night stand that may be what your impulses are telling you to do is suddenly not worth eroding the foundation of the longer term partnership that you said you wanted to build.
But it's not just that, right? It's the same conversation that we talked about before, which is, there's one aspect, which is, this is wrong, and if you get caught, it's really going to suck. But then it's, even if you don't get caught, you're living with that lie. I think that, as we talked about before, is like equally bad for you, even if you look at it from a selfish lens. It's like, I don't want to live with that in the back of my head, knowing that I fucked up and I had this like short-term burst that's going to impact the way I interact with this person, maybe forever. Something interesting, though, that came to mind was just, there does seem to be something unique about the trust that is broken with romantic cheating, because if you consider how most people, not all people, but most people would react in two scenarios, the first being, hey, my husband cheated on me, it was a one-night stand, I no longer trust him. And then the second scenario being like, I just found out that my husband has 10 bank accounts stored elsewhere and that he has this house that he didn't tell me about, or just like a bunch of these things that also really fundamentally break some sort of trust. I have a feeling most people are willing to forgive the second before they forgive the first, if that makes sense. And so there does seem to be, perhaps unsurprisingly, a unique relationship with trust in these like sexual relationships.
I think it's particularly strong in that domain because of culture. And so I would call this like, there's a strong cultural gravity that says, if you love someone, you would never cheat on them, or you wouldn't have eyes for someone else. And so that fundamental like love story is broken. And also in this case, our culture really looks down upon cheaters. Like if your friend came to you and said, hey, my girlfriend just cheated on me, what is your immediate reaction? It's like, oh my God, like how could she do that? I'm so sorry. Don't be with this person. That's kind of like the impulse I think a lot of people have. And you may not have that same impulse if your friend came to you and said, hey, I just stole some candy from the store. And what's interesting is, how do you measure the relative badness of those two forms of cheating? It's kind of unclear to me. And I think you could put this on some sort of scale, but it is clear to me that most people would think of that person as a much worse person for having cheated on their friend versus stealing from the store. And maybe it actually just comes down to what we've been talking about, which is the impact on other people of your actions.
I do think that's a good frame, but I also am reminded of the Sam Harris point of view, which is like, he actually just buckets it all together as bad, because I do think there are these value judgments, as we're speaking to, of society telling us that, okay, cheating in a relationship is this bad, and cheating on a driving test is this bad, and stealing from a store is this bad. There's like a spectrum. that society tells us. And I'm sure people can very eloquently argue where things fit on the spectrum and why, but I think it's actually just easier to just that they're all bad in a way and not try to justify the nuances of one versus another. And obviously, like, people can live how they want, but again, I think even from maybe the more selfish perspective, I think life is easier and more joyful when you don't lie and cheat because you don't have that weight on you.
I agree. And I think that's maybe one of the key takeaways from this episode, which is so obvious. Don't lie and cheat because there are implications for that. And I think the truth is we hear these things, they make sense to us. But as we go throughout our lives, as we've discussed, there's different domains in which maybe we make mistakes. We do things that we know we shouldn't have done or that we later regret. And then we fix those mistakes over time. And so everyone's going to have their own journey of doing that and the things that they do. But at the end of the day, I think one of my key takeaways for my own life is just, as you're talking about, simplifying things. And yeah, don't cheat your company because they have a loose expense policy. Don't violate the agreement that you've made with your partner as it comes to what you can do and not do in that relationship. And don't cheat in sports. And just generally, this orientation towards being quote unquote a good person, I think is about doing that. And often what that requires is maybe a short-term sacrifice. Like, you don't get to have the excitement of being with a new partner, or you don't get to earn 10 extra dollars from operating outside your company's expense policy. But in the long run, you just can live with yourself and I think not damage your reputation, which, as we know, is just really hard to build and easy to destroy with just a few simple actions.
Yeah. And you could flip it to say that when you do cheat, you're actually cheating yourself out of some other reality. Like, if you cheat in a sport, you're actually in some way cheating yourself out of the opportunity to truly get better at that skill and then still get the same results, but feel good about them. So yeah, I think that's one of my takeaways. And I think this probably, as you said, resulted in something that sounds quite obvious to people, but I think it is interesting to delve into these ideas of cheating and lying and what's good or what's bad, because I think we have these narratives that are told to us by society in terms of what's good and bad. And I think, as we've talked about in other episodes around narratives, you might still get to the same conclusion, but getting to that conclusion on your own, I think, is the important part.
Yeah, I just want to wrap by saying that I hope we haven't come across in any ways like cheater shaming. I guess that might be weird because we're admitting to small infractions that we've made in our own lives. But I think my general approach to this is, I think I'm very understanding of people who make mistakes in various domains. And as long as you're willing to confront those mistakes honestly and not just wrap it in some story about your good intentions and then change the way in which you operate moving forward, then you've clearly learned the lesson. That's what life and maturation, I think, is all about, which is learning the consequences of your actions, developing some sort of moral code, and not just saying that moral code or writing it down, but actually living it day by day. And I think little by little, at least in my own life, that's how I've tried to operate. And I'm sure I'll make mistakes down the road that I'm going to regret deeply and feel shame about, but try to stay open-minded to that just being a normal process and not beating yourself up for 20 years and or just compounding that mistake by doing it over and over again.
I'm glad you said that, because I actually found this episode maybe one of the hardest for us to record, not because it's emotional or anything, but just because there are these interesting dynamics of shame, but at the same time, not wanting to sound like you're condemning cheating or lying, but then also trying to be mindful of how other people might view you and not saying, oh, I've done all these bad things, but also not trying to shame other people if they've done those things. So I don't know. It's been interesting to navigate, and hopefully people listening will not judge us too much.
Yeah, honestly, it's been more uncomfortable for me than I thought to talk about some of these things. It's pretty interesting.
All right. If you made it to the end of this episode, definitely let us know if you liked it. You can find us on Twitter. My handle is SethSmithIO.
And you can find me at Calvin_Russer.
And as always, you can find the podcast account at Sydlis, SYDLIS. Thanks for listening.
Till next time.